follow. And sometimes I get an opportunity to create my own. And I decided I'm going to create my own. Actually, I think it's timely. And I don't think we have enough compassion in the world for ourselves, let alone for the suffering of others. And I thought, well, I'll be a little selfish. Make it about me and make it about all of us. So I'd like us to begin this talk with the forgiveness practice. And Jack is the one that I learned this from. And then Larry Yang introduced another stanza to the phrases that Jack shares with everyone in a few of his books. And if you sat with him, then you're familiar with this practice. Now, Tara Brach is a teacher in Washington, D.C., and she wrote a book on radical acceptance. And when I was in the CDL program, she would do talks around compassion. So the way she would have us listen and practice was either we would sit with our hands, with our palms up, or with our hands on our heart. And for this forgiveness practice, I'm going to invite you to try one of those if it feels okay with you. And this practice of forgiveness is very, very powerful. And just notice what arises and be kind to yourself. And we'll begin by letting yourself have a full deep breath and let that air go through your broad body. And let it be like a comforter. And we'll begin with ourselves. You can imagine something recent, or you can just be with the prayer itself. For all the times that I have harmed myself intentionally or unintentionally, I forgive myself. As much as possible, allow yourself just to take that in. And each time I do this practice, if I don't have the phrases in front of me, I paraphrase. And you can do the same for yourself. Make it yours. And now we're going to say it for someone who might have caused us harm. For all the times that someone has harmed me, intentionally or unintentionally, I forgive you. If I am unable to do so in this moment, know that I will do so in the future. Just take a breath with that, a full intentional breath. Just notice what arises and let it pass. And the next one. It's for those who have harmed us. For all the times that others have harmed me, intentionally or unintentionally, forgive you. And if I am unable to, in this moment, know that I may do so in the future. And just notice what arises and let it pass. This is the last part of this practice, and this is the one that Larry Yang introduced. For many people who practice or are active in social justice, are dealing with oppression or class or race or any of the isms or the war and suffering that goes on constantly around us, sometimes we feel helpless and powerless about how to do and what to do, because we don't feel there's enough. So I offer this to you, in understanding oppression and knowing it's what it is. For all the times that we have been harmed, intentionally or unintentionally, may we find forgiveness. And if not in this moment, when we are able to do so. And just be with that for a moment. Whatever arises, notice and let it pass. And when you're ready, I invite you to open your eyes if they're not already open. So thank you for your willingness to do that. I am deliberately started our practice, the talk, this way, because as I understand wisdom and compassion, it's also about 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. And in this practice of forgiveness and this practice of having compassion, there too lies wisdom. And the wisdom comes through the practice of knowing when to say or how to say, or when to act and how to act. And sometimes we don't act and we don't say things that sometimes we need to say. And can we have compassion and kindness for ourselves even in those difficult times? And Gina Sharp says, our ability to forgive allows us to meet suffering, our suffering, as well as the suffering of others, with a kind heart. So kindness and compassion are kind of weaved in here. And the practice and the ability to use wisdom is a maturity that's cultivated over time. And many of us have lived a few lifetimes, not just decades, a few lifetimes, whether you believe in past life or whatever. I sincerely mean it. We have lived a few lifetimes. And hopefully through those experiences, we have cultivated a maturity that at times the wisdom knows what to do when we don't know what to do. And sometimes it does make sense not to speak, even when we want to. And maybe that's the wisest practice in that moment. Or sometimes we want to act, and the wisest thing in that moment is to not. And sometimes we want to say yes one more time, and we say no. And that is a wise act. And that is a wise choice. And that is using compassion. But sometimes we don't think about it like that because of whatever our stories are or what we're told or what we believe. But sometimes the most profound act
do nothing.
So forgiveness is not simple, and we all know that. And that's part of the reason why I like the part. And I can't remember who added it or if Jack added it. All I know is that when I heard that part, may the rest of me able to do the forgiveness mm-hmm. practice, which is, if I am not able to do so in this moment, know that in time I will do so. And that is wisdom. So there's no quick fix here. And, you know, sometimes you just can't forgive in that moment. Whether you're hurting or you want to get back at somebody or something really traumatic has happened, this is not the moment to forgive. This might be the moment to have rage, righteous anger, and be with that, because the forgiveness will happen when it is time. And that is wisdom. And when it is time, the compassion comes through to allow us to forgive. But only when we're ready. So don't fake it. Don't say, okay, I forgive you. And you're lying, because you're not ready. You don't want, please. You need some time. You need some time to heal. Any of us who have experienced trauma know how difficult it is to heal from trauma. And then when we think we work through something, then what happens is the more subtle aspects of the trauma show up. And then it's like, oh no. So then where is the wisdom in that practice? Be patient. Have compassion. Use wisdom. The forgiveness will happen. This is what I just said. When we have been harmed, hurt, betrayed, abandoned, or abused, forgiveness can be often seem to be out of the question. Didn't I just say that? And yet, unless we find some way to forgive, we will hold that hatred and fear in our hearts forever. Imagine what the world would be like without forgiveness. Can you imagine Nelson Mandela after he walked out of prison after 27 years not being able to forgive? I can't even begin to wrap my head around that. And yet it's easier for me to wrap my head around that than it is for me to wrap my head around how he practiced the way he did. And yet this is an example of compassion and wisdom and forgiveness practice. So we have role models in our midst who say, if I can do it, you can at least try. For your own self, not because I did it, for your own well-being. As Jack Kornfield says, forgiveness is giving up hope of a better past. So it's about our relationship with the past, but it's how we are right now. So this idea, this concept of 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows is that we're open to what we can learn, and that it's part of the ocean of experience, and that we can hold it with compassion and mindfulness. All of us have experienced some aspect of 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows. All of us have been in the midst of the depth of our suffering, the abyss, that place of deep despair, and then the joys and the heights of feeling like, oh my God, this is true happiness. Can we just ride it out? That it comes and it goes. And it comes and it goes. And it feels as if sometimes that the sorrow never leaves us. And as I'm beginning to understand a more subtle way of holding this practice with the ebbs and flows of joys and sorrows, that even in the midst of sorrow, we can have ease. And there too is wisdom. And there too is compassion. So one of the questions that was asked, Jack, was, what's one of the most important quality for people to bring to their meditation practice? And he says, kindness towards yourself. This is not about self-improvement. It's about compassion. Patience is the wrong word. It's constancy. It's consistency. It's a willingness to show up in a kind way and be curious. Like when I offered the forgiveness practice, I took a risk, but it was with intention. And the intention was for all of us to hold and experience for that moment a practice of forgiveness, even if it was just a little bit of sense of bringing some ease, because it's something we can all fall back on. And in that offer and that intention is to continue to cultivate kindness towards ourselves. And as we continue to practice kindness towards ourselves, we cultivate it for others. Instead of being difficult, things then become a source of understanding with a greater sense of freedom. So that could also be considered being awake or having enlightenment in that moment. So compassion, this is Tara, is our capacity to relate in a tender and sympathetic way to what we perceive. So instead of resisting our feelings of fear or grief or trepidation or fill in the blank, we embrace our pain or our sadness or our stuckness or what, fill in the blank, with the kindness of a mother holding her child or a father or a loved one. And rather judging or indulging our desire for attention or chocolate or sex or whatever it is that we do, we regard our grasping with gentleness and care. Compassion honors our experience, and it allows us to be intimate with life. Of this moment, right here, as it is. Wow. I love Tara. So, Aung San Suu Kyi says, my top priority is for people to understand that they have the power to change things themselves. And it can be done. With the recent incident that happened in Ferguson, which was just so painful, regardless of who is in what position, we all are held accountable. I saw on the news that Amnesty International and announced it as a travesty. And it is. For all human life. And Thich Nhat Hanh says, to love our enemy is impossible. The moment we understand our enemy, we feel compassion towards him or her or them, and they are no longer our enemy. And then what do we do with a situation like Ferguson? That gives us something to think about. Sharon Salzberg says, sometimes when we think that to develop an open heart is to be truly loving and compassionate means that we need to be passive, to allow others to abuse us, to smile and let anyone do what they want with us. This is not what we mean by compassion. Quite the contrary. Compassion is not at all weak. It is the strength that rises out of being the true, seeing the true nature of the suffering in the world. It is fierce. It is courageous. It is deliberate. And that is wisdom. Compassion allows us to bear witness to that suffering whether it is in ourselves or others, without fear. It allows us to name injustice without hesitation and to act strongly with all the skill at our disposal. To develop this mind state of compassion is to learn to live, as the Buddha put it, with sympathy for all living beings without exception. And that is fierce. And that is compassion. So I liken compassion with a sword. You know, it's not this little scissors. It's this sword that you keep. This sword that stays sharp. And then when we wield this sword of compassion, we do it through the lens of wisdom. And we hold that as well. So wisdom and compassion are like our arms. One is wisdom, one's compassion. So can you imagine if everywhere you went, you used your arms and you thought that this is what I'm carrying around and this is the place that I move from all the time? That's pretty cool. That's pretty amazing. Most of us don't do it. Neither do I. But I like the idea, the intention, and the effort that you can bring to the potential and the possibility of doing that. So if you know me, you know I like poems, and I know Philip does too. And this one is by Rich Myers, and it says, "Trust the precipice." And I'm suggesting that for us, the precipice is trusting the wisdom and the compassion that we carry and our ability to forgive. It doesn't matter when they appear, these thresholds, these footpaths that again and again end and drop into a chasm. Into a chasm. We shift out of a phase that lingered too long on a broken horizon. We risk the fall with all our being, holding on like tenacious weeds to the cliff where meaning faltered, slipping from the place we made for it. Now life's change waits like a stepchild at the doorstep of the house where it may belong. As it gets darker, you are afraid of the next step's blind touch. What can you now rely upon? Nothing to do about the approaching fact of gravity, a hint of vertigo, anonymity, the precipice, is the resistance to the next moment, its unveiling, its miracle. Nothing to do but wait for a visualization, a vague shape of a memory that provides a theory of where you stand at this moment. No other way but to perhaps study the light inside you, abiding it as a threshold, as a prayer, or as somebody who thinks about you as God. Abide in that courage that arrives as trust. So when I saw this poem, when I read this poem, I was like, ah! And then I thought, oh my goodness, this is perfect. Has anybody had that feeling where, I know sometimes I'll wake up out of sleep and I'm jerked awake like that, because I'm afraid that if I step over, I'm going to fall into the abyss. So my body automatically wakes me up so that I feel safe. What if that abyss is just our fears? But that's what our fears do to us. They keep us from moving forward or taking the next step or saying the next thing or reaching out. Because that fear is so debilitating and it's so scary. And sometimes the fear is valid. There is a reason for it. And then sometimes it's not. So for the times when it's not valid, what's holding us back? Where's the wisdom? What's that? And are we holding compassion in its true essence in that way? So it's something to think about. I also I love John O'Donohue's work. He's a poet. But I came across this interview of his where he was being interviewed for one of his books, but he was talking about compassion. And he says, and I'll just read, I'll skip around, compassion distinguishes human presence from all presence on the earth. And the human mind is one of the most gracious gifts of creation. In a sense, the human being is the loneliest creature in creation. Paradoxically, the human being also has the greatest possibility for intimacy. I link compassion immediately with intimacy. Compassion is the ability to vitally imagine what it's like to be in another, the force that makes a bridge from the one island of one individuality to the island of another. It's the ability to step outside of our own perspective, limitations, and ego, and become attentive and in a vulnerable and encouraging and creative way to another person. I know in Pedro Children's teaching, she chairs the practice of Tonglen. And Tonglen is similar to what he's saying here. And it's nothing you have to do but feel. But really allow yourself the willingness to open yourself up to feeling this suffering. And I don't mean it lightly when I say all you have to do is open up. It's not that easy. Sometimes I find that I have to turn away. I just can't take it another thing, and I don't know what to do with it when I take it in. So I kind of shut down or turn away, and then I feel guilty because then I'm like, oh, this is not what a Buddhist does. And I'm like, oh, but this is what I do. And it's like, okay, can I acknowledge this is all the suffering I can hold in this moment and not judge that and bring a little compassion to that? Because we see it around us all the time. When the Ferguson happened, I just turned it off. I just like, I don't want to know. I don't want to see it. I don't want to feel it one more time. I don't want to know this one more time. And I just was like, I didn't want to get into the conversation about it because it was just so huge. And it was just so triggering. And it was just so painful. And I was like, I'm done. And that shutting down might have been a self-protection because I grew up around it all the time. And I have 5 brothers, and it could have been one of my brothers. So it's very real to me. And that's no excuse, but it's just what it is. So I'm not even using excuses or saying excuses. I'm just saying this is what it is for me. And then when I allow myself to open to the suffering, I just cry. What am I supposed to, what can I do? How can I be different with it? And to understand the complexity of it is to understand the depth of suffering. And with all the wars going on right now, everywhere, no one is exempt from suffering. No one. So bring a little compassion. Bring a little kindness. May all beings have ease in their suffering. May we find a world, and be in a world that we practice and cultivate compassion, moment to moment to moment. And it is beyond hard. It is courageous. It is fierce. And this is what the Buddha did. This is what he went around and did and talked to all these different communities about love and kindness and compassion and care and metta and joy and equanimity and how to be fierce and how to be with forgiveness and be with what is and not the way we want it to be. And that's the beauty of the 10,000 joys and sorrows is, can we be with what it is? It's like sometimes the bear eats you. Sometimes you eat the bear, and sometimes you miss each other. So what do you know? What can you say? It's what it is. Can we be with what it is and not want it to be any different? And sometimes, no. I want it to be different. I don't want the world to be the way it is. And it is. So can I be with that? Can we all be with that? Let's see, what else do I want to say here? I do have another poem, but I'll get to that in a moment. This is what happens when you have all these things you wrote. Alright. 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows reminds me that this tough time will pass, this difficult time will pass, and there will be more tough times. And there will be good times as well. And it also reminds me that during the good times, there will be some bad times, and it's okay. But what happens sometimes is I forget. I don't know about you, but when I'm in the midst of that difficult, can I say difficult one more time? Difficult time, I forget if there's any joy. It's the last thing that's coming across my mind. It's like, you know, with the Linus cartoon, and the character always had the, was it the cloud around him? There was the one that carried the dirt, but he had the cloud around him. I figured both could be true. And it's like, nothing looks good. Everything is just with this cloud around you. And then all of a sudden, the sun taps you and said, wait, here's a beam of sunlight. Here's a ray of sun. In the midst of this cloud, you're walking around it that isn't going anywhere. And it's like, oh, that's right. Let me remember this too. That's right. And then for a moment, it's like, oh, okay. But I forget about it in the big scheme of things because I'm still in the midst of the suffering or the sorrow or whatever it is. You name, fill in the blank. We've all been there, and we've all been in this place of, it's never going to end. Like teenagers and little ones, they're like, oh my God, this is the end of the world, right? They give you the drama. But we do the same thing. We just don't say it out loud, but we act the same way. It's like, oh my God, this is never going to end. Then it's like, oh, wait a minute. Wisdom taps us and says, wait, you forgot something. You've been through this. Let me help you remember. Oh, that's right. I can get through this. How do I choose to get through it? Because we got to go through it. There's no way to go around any kind of sorrow and suffering and stuff. It's like we're in it and we got to get through this. So the question is, wisdom is, can you do this with grace? I'm right here. I got your hand. I'm not leaving you. And compassion is saying, I got your other hand. And I'm not leaving you. And I'm here. Just remember that in compassion is the word passion. Can we let them hold our hand as we go through this so that it's not as difficult as in that moment it feels like. And yet we can acknowledge that in that moment it is. That's the paradox. And then remember, we can get through this because it will pass. And that is wisdom. So John Donahue has this, I'll leave you with this poem. I have to bring another one in. And this one's called For Equilibrium. A blessing. And so this is a blessing to all of us, to all of you. Like the joy of the sea coming home to shore, may the relief of laughter rinse through your soul. As the wind loves to call things to dance. May your gravity be lightened by grace. Like the dignity of moonlight restoring the earth, may your thoughts incline with reverence and respect. As water takes whatever shape it is in, so free may you be about who you become. As silence smiles on the other side of what's said, may your sense of irony bring perspective. As time remains free of all that it frames, may your mind stay clear of all its names. May your prayer of listening deep enough to hear in the depths the laughter of God. May our practice of understanding the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows hold us with wisdom and compassion. And thank you for your practice. So before we go into metta, which is a few minutes away, I've left it open. I left us some time where you can ask questions and comments. So now I'm back on schedule. I got the schedule. We got this. if you're going to speak, there's a mic, and I think it would be helpful to use because some of us need extra support.
I'd like you to just repeat the name of that poem, please.
Yes. It is called For Equilibrium, A Blessing by John O'Donohue, and it's from the book To Bless the Space Between Us, A Book of Blessings.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That was the easiest question I've ever gotten. Yes.
As a part of the forgiveness practice, the one I love to do the most and is the hardest for me is, and I think it also came from Mary Jane, the added part where being unable to be with the sadness and suffering in the world, I forgive myself as much as I'm able for being unable to be with that, because I as you said, with Ferguson and with other things, it's hard to just even be open enough to accept it, much less
right.
Do anything with it.
Right.
So I love that at least I can forgive myself for not being able to accept it.
It's a practice. And that's what's so wonderful about the teachings of the Buddha is that we get an opportunity to practice over and over again. And I remember years ago, when I first started understanding the paradox of being both the oppressed and the oppressor. And I think part of what helped me get it was listening to Thich Nhat Hanh's poem and reading Thich Nhat Hanh's poem about Call Me By My True Name. And one of the things, there's a part in there about a young girl being raped and understanding not only the part of her being raped, but also the rapist. And I was like, okay, I'm done. And I had to really sit with that. And it's like, wow, that's huge. That is really huge. And it's one thing to intellectually get something, but it's another to have a lived experience. And so whenever you've been on the side of either crossing a boundary or having someone cross that boundary that you set, it helps you understand it's not as simple as it's this or that. It's like when we bring an understanding, it doesn't mean it's easier to hold, it just means we have an understanding of it. And that can be hard too.
numerous stories in the paper and, you know, heard on the radio and on the internet about people who have forgiven those who have committed heinous crimes against their family. And what has struck me about all these articles that I've read is that not only have they given forgiveness, but they've also reached out. That forgiveness just wasn't enough. Would you like to comment a little bit more on that? It seems to me that forgiveness can just be words, but somehow there has to be another step. And that's what I've noticed in most of these stories that I've read.
Thank you for your question. And when I was preparing this, and I didn't write it down, but this past summer, a group of us took a training in restorative justice for Dharma practitioners. It was amazing because there are rituals involved, and it is about forgiveness and the person's willingness who's been, the harm has been caused to, if they're willing to find a way to meet the person who has caused them the harm, and then what action is taken for the healing for both of them. And in the circle, there's a way that the conversations can be held and had in a way that there are no apologies. And it can be very painful. And the point of this is the forgiveness goes from the words to the actions. But it can't, there's no skipping over. So like in the Eightfold Path, we have the intention. We have our intention. Our intention is to forgive. Our effort, the effort we bring to it is to forgive and to be able to sit with the difficulty and with the conflict and the suffering that either you caused, the person caused, or you're on the receiving end of the one, or you're the one that caused it. So both parties are in a lot of pain. And then as with the Eightfold Path, then we go to wise action. So through these acts of forgiveness, then through compassion, we move to action. But we move to action when the wisdom comes through us to move forward. And that, to me, is the circle of completion with the journey of healing around forgiveness. Because it's not just, I forgive myself. Then how does my behavior reflect the forgiveness that I just did? So if I fall back on old behavior, it may say, oh, I need to do more work, or you're kidding yourself, or it's harder than you thought, or maybe it's not, you're not ready. And it's okay to say, when I am able, so let me reflect, but I'm aware that I've got this far, and there's more work to do. So then that brings in the kindness. That brings in the compassion. But to act is a place of through wisdom, but it's also a revolutionary act because it's transformation. And in restorative justice work, it's transformation. And it's freedom. And it's healing. And it's the Buddhist teachings. And it's amazing. And it's hard work. Maybe one more short question. Thank you. It's a great question. Okay. 1 second, sweetheart. She's going to bring the mic around. Thank you.
Could you say more about the restorative justice you did?
My understanding of restorative justice, it comes out of the legal system for reparation for both the injured and the one who did the crime. And it's been successful and in many arenas. And they're using it a lot in the schools in Oakland, and they're seeing major results, time results. And it's for those who do the work, it's like a bodhisattva, because the rewards are not personal, it's for the greater good. And what I experienced, the little bit I've done, is that I'm dropping this seed that goes like this. So there's lots of information online in different places where you can get information about training and workshops. And I'm still learning about the practice, because there's the idea of causing as little harm as possible is such a core practice of the Buddhist teachings. And there's a way that bringing in restorative justice to places where people are so committed to ending suffering, it gives them tools to work with how to deal with conflict. And done in such a caring and respectful and dignified way that people all feel they're heard. And I think that's very important. And it's one more practice of the Bodhisattva and the Buddhist teachings. So thank you. So we're going to end this part. Thank you for your questions and your teachings. And we're going to shift to the metta practice. So again, I invite you to either hold your hands with your palms open or on your heart. And Linda's going to say a few words, and then I'm going to end with a metta practice.
Okay, so we're going to send metta for Christina, who is struggling to pass an exam, for Mike and Liz, who lost their daughter, for Eva, may your path be peaceful and your heart lightened as we send healing blessings.
So along with those announcements, I want everyone to take a moment and think of someone that they want to send metta to, whether it's themselves or it's a group. Just hold that in your heart. May all beings be protected from inner and outer harm. May all beings live with ease and well-being. May all beings love and be loved. And may all beings be free from suffering and its causes and conditions. So before I move into the dedication of merit, and I always find that this is something that I so appreciate, is that we dedicate our efforts and our intentions for the well-being of all beings. I just find that humbling and at the same time uplifting. And I truly, truly believe that hopefully it will help those who need to hear it, to hold it and have it, including myself and others. So let's just take a moment and dedicate the merit. And we offer our intention and our effort through understanding 10,000 joys and 10,000 sorrows in our lives through the wings of compassion and wisdom. We offer this merit to all beings with the intention of liberation and healing for everyone in all directions.